I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. Today is Monday, November 13th. My name is Mike Brocky, and I am joined tonight by my two co-hosts, Zach Haydorn and Robert Vallejos. Thanks for joining me tonight, gentlemen.
Happy to be here.
Great to be back this week again.
Good, good. If you have any questions or comments for us, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number to call is 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. And if you do want to be part of today's show, don't forget to press 1. That will let us know to bring you on live. If you prefer to email the show, you can do that as well. The email address is mmalivecast@gmail.com. All right, guys, let's jump right into the show, and let's start with a review of UFC 120 from this past Saturday. In the main event, it was Dustin Poirier over Sergio Pettis via TKO due to injury. 2 minutes and 8 seconds of round three. A strange finish to this one. Poirier had Pettis twisted up on bottom, and when Pettis tried to escape, it looked like it was a rib injury that forced him to tap. But either way, this was Poirier's fight from the get-go. Poirier busted him up pretty good and was winning on the ground as well. I'm a big fan of Poirier's, and I hope that the UFC gives him the winner of Alvarez Gaethje. Robert, what were your thoughts on Poirier's performance and the fight overall?
No, I thought he looked really good, and he looked good for a while. I think he gets sort of lost in the shuffle on such a thick division that it's hard to, you know, handicap where he should be within that hierarchy. But I thought he looked great. I thought Pettis looked okay, not like not like somebody that was completely shot, but I just think Poirier was so much more physical in every aspect of this fight. Everything Pettis tried to do, Poirier had an answer to and then some. So I'm very entertained by a fight that I really wasn't looking forward to a whole lot in the beginning.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree with you. I've always been a fan of Poirier's, and he does seem to get looked over. He did look good against Alvarez. It was just a shame the way that fight ended. Zach, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I got to agree with both of you guys. Really impressed with Poirier, and was extremely entertained by a fight that I wasn't expecting to be entertained by. In my eyes, it was pretty brutal. Both guys busted open. It had, from a fan's point of view, it had everything you wanted in terms of action. But, Poirier brought it, and I'm with you. I hope he gets the winner of that fight because I think he deserved it.
Yeah, I would definitely be looking forward to that fight. So, all right, guys, in the co-main event, it was Matt Brown defeating Diego Sanchez via knockout. 3 minutes, 44 seconds of the opening round with probably one of the most brutal elbows you'll ever see. Robert, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, that was something else. And I don't know about you guys, but on my feed of it, something happened on the Fox feed while it happened that I didn't actually see it in real time. I had to wait for the replay. Yeah, that was crazy because it looked like Matt Brown did something otherworldly to just knock Diego Sanchez out. No, and, it's it's kind of what we thought last week, that even though this is Matt Brown's retirement fight, Diego Sanchez was the one that maybe a little further along along the line headed closer and closer to retirement, even though he will never willfully retire. I thought, you know, this just looked like a mismatch when it got out there. And that was brutal. The elbows are a very deadly weapon. And as much as, you know, there's all this talk about, you know, bringing in the 12-6 elbow, I think any elbow from any distance is pretty much a lethal weapon, and that surely bore out in this fight.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Zach, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought the elbow was just insane. Too bad I didn't see it live as it happened either, because I probably would have jumped out of my skin watching it. But, yeah, went exactly how I thought it was. I thought Sanchez just came out of the gate just way too aggressive and just too, you know, just too insane. Like, he just didn't seem controlled. And I think Matt Brown maintained his composure and took advantage of it. So it went as expected, if you're talking to me.
Yeah, I thought it went as expected as well. And that's just Diego Sanchez, though. I mean, that's what you get from him. You know, I hope.
Right.
And I don't see it happening, but I would like to see him retire. Even Matt Brown, you know, this was supposed to be his retirement fight, and now it sounds like, you know, he's gonna think about it a little bit more, talk to his family and friends. But what seemed like, you know, an open and closed case here, not so much now. So, you know, I mean, they're both getting up there. I mean, I can't remember what we talked about last week as far as how many fights both guys have, but it's a lot. They've both taken a lot of damage, especially Sanchez. I mean, he's getting knocked out more frequently, and his shin just isn't there anymore. So let's move on to the next one, where we had Andre Arlovsky beating Junior Albini via unanimous decision. The scorecards were 29-28, 30-27, and 30-27. Not a very exciting fight here between two guys going, in my opinion, nowhere fast. Zach, I'll start with you on this one. What did you think of the fight, and were you surprised by the outcome?
I wasn't really too surprised by the outcome, and from the fight standpoint, it kind of just went as I thought it would, in terms of, you know, slow paced, and for my liking, just too slow. So in that regard, it was just kind of a standard heavyweight fight, and Arlovsky took it to him and just dominated in every fashion. And I think that dominance, to me, while, you know, played good for him, just didn't make it enjoyable to watch. It was just lumbering, and he just took it to him in every way, and made it not as interesting as I had hoped.
Yeah, what I found interesting on the gambling side of things was Albini got all the way up to a 3-1 favorite, which really surprised me, because really,
did he really? I didn't know.
Yeah, and you're really going off of you're not going off of a lot of history here with Albini. So once I saw that, I kind of, you know, shifted my thinking a little bit and took a little on Arlovsky, and I'm glad I did. Robert, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, that fight was just a classic case that if a heavyweight fight doesn't end within the first minute, you're really in for something unimaginative and
right.
And boring, with some really poor choices of attire for Albini, which really made the fight even worse. Yeah, Arlovsky, I think we talked about a little bit last week. He's kind of – he had his late career resurgence, and now he's back down, you know, down to declining again. But he can still – he's still a effective fighter in some respects. So this fight is just one that I don't think anybody really cared to see in the first place. And the results, I don't think, have any bearing on anything. I think you said it perfectly, Mike, when you said two guys that are kind of on the road to nowhere very quickly, and that was definitely the case here.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, what's Arlovsky at best? He's a gatekeeper to the top 10, and Albini probably not even a top 15 fighter, Robert.
Right. I mean, last week you were asking me if Albini had a Wikipedia page, and if that's even a question, then you know the guy's not necessarily thought of. And Arlovsky is a guy that I think the UFC will still use if he continues to fight, because he's a name from the past,
right,
that has, you know, some sort of relevance, that he's still a decent enough fighter. But I don't think, you know, when you start talking about, you know, the top five of that division, there's just – he has no place in there.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on to the next one here. Cesar Fieda defeated Nate Marquardt via split decision, 28-29, 29-28, and 29-28. I thought this fight started off slowly, but it picked up probably halfway through the second round. It was a tougher fight to score, in my opinion. I did have it for Fieda. But again, I thought it was a decent fight. It definitely picked up some steam towards the end there. Zach, I'll start with you on this one. What were your thoughts on his on Fieda's performance?
Yeah, I actually really liked this fight a lot. I know that it started out slow, but I think it was interesting, you know, in the beginning parts of that second round to see Fieda really figure out what it was going to take to win and then execute that plan in order to get that victory. It was kind of, I really enjoyed watching that happen. So, I mean, from an action standpoint, I think there wasn't too much left to be desired, but just kind of seeing him figure it out and then execute that plan and gain the victory, I thought that was that made it really fun. So I think a lot of people might not have liked this one that much, but I enjoyed it.
You agreed with the decision?
Yes, I did. I thought the first round you could have was a toss up, and then the next two to me were pretty clear in his favor.
And Robert?
Yeah, I thought it was actually a little difficult to score when the fight was over. I kind of had no idea, you know, without actually writing down, you know, who won what round. It didn't seem like anyone really had the advantage. Part of that is Marquardt's just is always been a difficult fighter to figure out, and so that plays into it. I think Marquardt is a guy that is another one of the guys from the past. He gets booked quite often, and he doesn't win that much, but he never looks completely embarrassed in his fight. So I think there's still something there with Marquardt, even though he's not really a top of the card kind of performer at this point.
Yeah, he's solid. I think the UFC knows that they can go to him and he'll show up for the fight. He'll be in shape and he'll put on a decent performance for the most part. But yeah, I agree with you with your assessment on Marquardt for sure there. All right, we had Rafael Assuncao over Matthew Lopez in the next fight via knockout. 1 minute 50 seconds of round three. I thought Assuncao looked really good in this fight, especially considering his last fight. I had him losing, although he got the decision against Moraes. I thought he lost that fight. I thought Assuncao was probably a little too much for Lopez at this stage in his career. The leg kicks were just brutal. I mean, just looking at Lopez's leg was tough to see. He's definitely going to be feeling that one for days. So, you know, kudos for Assuncao as well for pulling back on that hammer fist, just recognizing Lopez was out, because he could have landed, you know, a few more shots. And I couldn't believe he was even able to pull back on that. Robert, I'll start with you on this one. What were your thoughts on Assuncao's performance?
No, I did think he looked good. And we've clowned on him before. He's kind of the king of the split decision victory, because he has a pretty shiny record, but so many of those are these, you know, squeaker split decisions. And it was good to see him get a finish against a guy that he's supposed to be, you know, appreciably better than. So that was nice to see. And I actually thought Lopez at times had moments in the fight, but it was clear who the more skilled fighter at this point is.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree with that. Zach, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I agree with most everything you guys said. I thought Assuncao's performance was really great. I made note of the leg kicks as well. Just insane amount of damage that he did with those. And the finish was brutal, too. So, you know, after that fight, I know he called out, you know, Dillashaw in the middle of the ring afterwards. And after going into the fight, I don't know if that matchup is something that I want to see, but after that performance, you know, I wonder if it's something that's actually feasible, and it may be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of options here. Obviously, I think they're still going to look at the Demetrius Johnson fight for TJ Dillashaw, and then you probably have the Garbrandt rematch.
Right.
And then, Robert, where do you think Assuncao fits into the picture here? Because it seems to me like from the UFC's perspective, they treat him kind of like Damian Maia, where he obviously deserves a title shot at some point, but he just doesn't have, you know, the marketability, the flair, you know, whatever it is, you know, the UFC looks for. He just doesn't possess it. So I think he's very easy to look over. Do you think he definitely deserves a shot after probably, say, a Garbrandt rematch?
He would in theory, but I think he probably takes another fight in between then. I mean, we don't know what Jimmy Rivera's free now, right?
True. Yep.
Yeah, so there's another guy who, you know, in theory deserves that. I would like to see those two matched up. So it's still confusing. The division kind of hard to figure out who actually is deserving of that shot, because Gavrant, I think we all want to see that fight again, but he's not necessarily a guy that was this dominant champion that, you know, deserves a rematch instantly. So it's very hard to slot him. And I think because of that, though, Asensio just might end up being the odd man out because of all those options from a marketability standpoint and promotional standpoint. He's the least attractive of all those options.
Right. So, Zach, if it's a choice between Asensio and Jimmy Rivera, who do you think they're taking?
I think they're going to take Jimmy Rivera for no other reason, but he just seems to be a better matchup on all standpoints.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, and then the main card opener, Clay Guida over Joe Lauzon by TKO, 1 minute, 7 seconds of round one. You know, I didn't like the way this fight ended. You actually heard Paul Felder saying the fight was over, and I did, you know, pause it and check how many seconds before the fight was actually stopped. Felder said it's 16 seconds prior to the ref finally stopping the fight. And I agree with Felder. I thought the fight should have been stopped a lot sooner. Lauzon didn't throw a punch, nor was he intelligently defending himself. But whatever. It was an excellent performance from Guida, which means we'll see him again in the UFC cage, whether we like it or not. And as for Joe Lauzon, as much as I like him, he's one of my favorite fighters and just an overall, you know, good guy that everyone really likes. He's taken a lot of damage in his most recent fights as well. So like Diego Sanchez, not quite to Sanchez's, you know, level here, but it might be time for Lauzon to, you know, start thinking about retirement as well. So, Zach, I'll start with you here. What did you think of Guida's performance and overall what you see for Lauzon going forward?
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything that you said. I sat down and, you know, cracked open a beer, and by the time I did that, it was already, you know, over. And I agree with you that the finish to that fight really, it kind of got me a little bit. To me, it was obvious that it was over. And I think the referee did those on a very big disservice by not calling it sooner. I'm not sure what he was thinking in there. I just really don't know what was going through his head, but you're right. Guida had a heck of a performance, dominated. And I think we might be at the end of the line for Lauzon.
Yeah. Robert, any different thoughts?
No. The only thing I would say that maybe in defense of the referee is that because Lozon's so long, it kind of maybe from the instant, you know, in real time, looked like he was pushing Guida off. So maybe there's some justification there. And we have the angle that the referee doesn't necessarily have. So maybe there's that. But even at that, you know, it looked like it wasn't a fight for what seemed like an eternity, even though it was just a few seconds. So, yeah, very, very questionable officiating on that one.
Yeah. And where do you see Guida going from here? Because he actually looked good in his last two fights, which surprised the heck out of me.
That's hard to say because he's been in a skid for like 6 years. But like you said, right. You know, the last time he was relevant was when he beat Anthony Pettis. And then it's been very, very difficult for Clay Guida. I don't know where they go with him. I don't, you know, obviously I don't think he's going to fight anybody of the upper echelon. So I think kind of where he was on Saturday, kind of where he's going to be, unless, you know, maybe he strings two more of these together and then we're looking at, you know, something has definitely clicked in this guy. But, you know, he's a guy in his late 30s that had such a down streak. I don't think that we're going to get this big renaissance from Clay Guida.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that assessment overall. All right, guys, let's take our first break. And when we come back, we'll quickly run down this Saturday's UFC Sydney card and then hit a couple of the big MMA news notebook items.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. but because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, guys, let's take a look at this Saturday's UFC Sydney card. The main event takes place in the heavyweight division, where Fabricio Werdum takes on Marcin Tybura. As of right now, there aren't any odds posted for the event, but I would assume Werdum would be favored in this one. Zach, who do you see winning this?
Yes, so I habitually pick against Werdum, like habitually, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it this time. I think he is just, in my eyes, clearly the better fighter, cleaner, and I think he is just better in all aspects. So in that regard, I think he's going to unanimous decision and over Tybura.
I'm going with Werdum as well. Robert, is it a clean sweep?
It's a sweep. Werdum actually looked semi-decent, I would say, in his fight against Overeem, which was just a weird fight. And other than that, I mean, I think he looked pretty good in recent years, aside from his KO to Stipe. So I'll take the better fighter in this case.
All right. The co-main event takes us to the women's flyweight division, where Beck Rawlings goes up against newcomer Jessica Rose Clark. Robert, let's start with you on this one. Which way are you going here?
I'm going to go with Beck Rawlings just because there's I don't really know that much about Clark, and someone that's, you know, almost 30 years old and just entering the UFC. I'm going to take Rawlings in this situation. I know that's great analysis, but that's how I'm going to go with it.
Does she have a Wikipedia page, Jessica Rose Clark?
Yeah, she does. So that,
she does.
That made
wow.
it difficult.
Okay.
That's how I knew her age. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't know how old she was.
I did not expect her to have a Wikipedia page, so I'm impressed already there. I'm going to go with the newcomer, Jessica Rose Clark, only because I am just never impressed with Rawlings in any of her fights, whether she wins or loses. She just doesn't do anything that's impressive. So I am going to go with Clark here. Zach, looks like it's 1-1. Which way are you going?
I'm going to go with Rawlings as well. Just I think looking at this fight on paper, the tail of the tape is one ugly fight, in my opinion. Rawlings doesn't impress me much, but she's the ugly that I know, as opposed to Jessica Rose Clark, who I don't know. So going with Rawlings.
I love the analysis here. All right, next we have Tim Means taking on Bilal Muhammad. And actually, this is a fight I'm probably looking forward to the most. I think this should be a good one. And while I'm a big fan of Means, I have to go with Muhammad here. Zach, which way are you going?
I'm going with Muhammad as well. He's a younger fighter, and you know, looking at his career to this point, it's just he's a bit cleaner. You know, he has the finishes to his record. He has the ability and the proven record that says, hey, when I get in there, you know, I end things, and I think he's just going to be a little bit too much to handle for Tim Means. So I'm going with Muhammad.
And Robert.
Yeah, I'll just complete the sweep there with Muhammad. I think the time away for Tim Means a couple of years ago, when he came back, he looked, you know, kind of rejuvenated by it. But I wonder if, you know, it just has the oldest time hasn't taken its toll on him. And, you know, that series with Oliveira, I don't think he ever looked good in that series. So I'm gonna take Muhammad as well.
All right, clean sweep for Muhammad. Next, Australia's own Jake Matthews goes up against Bohan Velikovic. I'm going with Jake Matthews to get it done in front of his hometown crowd. Robert, which way are you going here?
I'm going to agree with you on that one, Matthews.
And Zach.
Get out the brooms. Clean sweep. Matthews for me, too.
All right, moving on. And do one of you two know how to pronounce Elias's name?
I do not. I was going to actually, you know, was looking forward to hearing you talk about
it. We'll go with Elias Theodoro. He takes on Dan Kelly. I'm going to go with Theodoro in his well-conditioned hair. Zach, which way are you going?
Yeah, this is a tough one for me to pick. So I, in interest of full transparency, I don't know these fighters too well, but I'm going to go with Deodoro as well.
And Robert, Queen Sweep?
No, I'll take judo down here just out of pure fandom.
Oh, boy.
Okay. All right.
I just enjoy seeing like this 40-year-old guy all taped up, so I'm going to fly that flag.
Chalk one up for the old man. All right. And then the main card opener, Alexander Volkanovski versus Umberto Bandinet. I'll be the first to admit I don't know much about either one of these guys, so I don't know. I'm sure they both have Wikipedia pages. I didn't check. But I'm going to just take a guess and go with Bandinet on this one. Robert, any detailed analysis here? Which way are you going?
Well, as the Pro Wrestling MMA Torch's official Wikipedia correspondent, I would report that it's actually got a different opponent listed for Volkanovski. It says Shane Young, who doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so we'll go with Volkanovski against no matter who he faces.
Interesting, because I took this right off of UFC's website. Zach?
Yeah, I'll go with Volkanovski as well. You know, if you have a Wikipedia page, you know, you're something in this world, so I'm going with him.
All right, guys. Before we jump into the MMA News Notebook, we do have a caller on hold, so I do want to get to him, and then we'll jump right back into the latest news. State your name and the city you're calling for from.
This is Brian from Cumberland, Maryland. First question I have for you is, do you think USC will allow Diego and Jay Lazon to get to Bellator if they don't want them, or do you think they want to keep on to them?
So your question is, do you think there's a few more fights left in the UFC for both fighters?
Well, you think UFC is interested in keeping them around, or you think they'll let them go somewhere else pretty much?
I think they're big enough names still. That I think the UFC will keep him around. Like I said earlier, I would prefer if Lozon called it a career. Obviously, Guida's looked good in his last two, so there's no reason for them to get rid of him. Zach or Robert, either of you guys want to, you know, chime in and add to that?
Yeah, I think I agree. I think they're, you know, they're certainly not on the uptick of their career, but I think they do hold some name value, and I think they're guys that the UFC can lean on in the right spots, in the strategic spots. So for that reason, I don't think they're just going to, you know, ship them off outright.
Yeah, and I don't think the UFC has had any problems with either fighter either, so it's not like they're tough to deal with or anything like that. What's your next question for us, Ryan?
Okay, my next question is on Sage Northcutt. You sort of does like a Tim Tebow like personality. Does that sort of clash with Dana White since he's an atheist? Do you see them maybe getting into arguments because Dana doesn't like when the fighters are like Christian, like open about it, like during their interviews?
Zach or Robert, I will lean to one of you on this one.
I'll take a stab at it first. I think overall Dana White cares about money, and he cares about pushing the right fights and the fights that are going to draw the most fans and make the most money for the UFC. So if Northcutt becomes that guy and he gets himself to a place where that's applicable, I don't think Dana White is going to care at all.
Yeah, Robert. Ain't
yeah, and just to add to that, I think if anything, Dana White has shown that they really are invested in Sage Northcutt. You know, no matter if he, you know, wins, loses, that's an entity that they want to be in business with. So I don't think a clashing of religious beliefs would be the thing that would, you know, keep him away. I think if he, you know, just doesn't win any fights for a couple of years, that would be the thing. But if he rose to prominence, I'm sure Dana White would somehow shoehorn it into a way that fits his narrative. So I don't think that would be a major issue, at least not in front of our eyes. Maybe something behind the scenes, but not directly.
Yeah, that's a good point, Robert. Ryan, anything else for us?
Yep. I also have that question on the technical difficulties they had Thorne and Diego match with the elbow. Does that happen frequently? Do you think that's a result of them letting go a lot of their employees recently?
No, in fact, you know, I didn't see the fight live, but I did watch it, another showing of it on FS1, and they must have fixed it somehow because I didn't have any issues on when I watched it. But I did hear a lot about how there was a glitch and it pretty much the elbow and the knockout was missed. I didn't hear it was an issue with any of the employees. From what I read, it was just a technology glitch. Zach or Robert, I don't know if you guys heard anything more, but from what I understand, it was strictly just a glitch in technology.
Yeah, those things happen too.
In like in NFL games and NBA games. Right. I don't really think it's a UFC-centric problem.
Right, and I don't think it has anything to do with the employees or the layoffs or anything like that. It was just unfortunate when it occurred. But anything else for us here, Ryan?
I guess the only other thing I have for you is when I went to that fight a couple of weeks ago, they moved our seats to like maybe not such a nicer area in the arena. Does that happen more frequently with mixed martial arts than, say, pro wrestling? Because I've never had that happen to me in a pro wrestling.
What happened? You had seats, and they moved you to seats with a worse view?
Yes, basically, I didn't buy the tickets. My buddy bought them for us, and I guess they're supposed to be, like, in the middle, so you could see, like, you know, to the center, but we were moved more off to the side. We were probably closer to the action, but it was harder to see since we were, you know, off to the very end, and it was harder to also get out where we were compared to where we would have been since it was like an aisle seat where we were originally supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm not sure the reasoning behind that. It's been a long time since I was at an MMA event, so I really couldn't speak to that. I don't know if Zach or Robert, if you guys can.
The WWE does move their crowd around to fit their television performance. If you see every week for like SmackDown, the building's half empty, but when you watch SmackDown, it looks like it's a sold out place. And a lot of that is they've moved people's seats, you know, in different areas to make it look full, which can be an inconvenience because sometimes you choose a seat for a very specific reason and then
right.
You get moved. You know, that's not a great experience.
Ryan, were they moving other people as well?
Yeah, comparison.
That's the three of us, as far as I know. We got there pretty late, so I didn't get to see them moving around other people. We were sort of a nuisance because, like I said, it was very difficult to get into our seats since we were on the end. There was no way to get out besides getting through everyone, so everyone had to stand up for us to get in.
Yeah, no, I don't think the way the arena looked on TV would have been an issue. So I wish I had a better answer for you here, Ryan, but I'm not sure why they would have done that. That it for
okay.
you? Do you have
Thanks
anything
for
else?
Taking my call.
All right. We appreciate it, Ryan. Call
no,
again.
That's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, guys. Let's move into the top MMA news stories here. So Conor McGregor and his ridiculous behavior at Bellator 187. The event was held in Dublin, Ireland last week. And after one of his SBG Ireland teammates won their fight, McGregor climbed the fence and entered the cage. Then after a brief celebration with Charlie Ward, who was the winner of the fight and McGregor's teammate, he went and confronted referee Mark Goddard. And luckily, McGregor was restrained before things could escalate even more. But, you know, putting all that aside, I actually felt bad for Redman, who had just suffered getting knocked out. And here he's basically almost getting steamrolled here by McGregor, who's trying to get at Goddard. And I wrote in my column for MMAtorch.com about it that McGregor's actions, I guess both at UFC Fight Night 118 and now here at Bellator 187, I think they crossed the line so far that you really can't even see the line anymore. Robert, I'm going to start with you on this one. What's your take on all of it?
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, without knowing the laws in Ireland, it looked almost like a criminal act. You know, if somebody jumps into a sporting event, generally they are arrested for their actions. And I know that it's a little bit different being that you're a fellow competitor in the same sport, but it's not even the company he fights in. So he really – and he wasn't a licensed cornerman. So in every way, it was completely inappropriate. And it's one thing to jump the cage. It's difficult because – there seems to be an inconsistency in MMA of when they will or will not let somebody from the outside come in. You see sometimes when a fighter's trying to call like a member of their family into the cage, they won't let him. But when the UFC's trying to promote the next fight, then suddenly that fighter is allowed to go into the cage. This was absolutely ridiculous. There needs to be some discipline on McGregor. The question is, how do you actually meaningfully discipline somebody that has so much power and so much, you know, money? Like, what are you going to do, fine the guy? There's no real way, no matter what the UFC or any athletic commission does, there's no way that it'll ever be, you know, good enough to level a suspension on such a figure.
And I agree with I agree some with what you're saying, because I know they suspended Roy Nelson for 6 months. Not a ton of time, but – yeah, this is a tough one for the UFC and Dana White. I'm really interested to see how they handle this. Zach, what's your take?
Yeah, my take is the same as your guys. I was, you know, appalled at watching it. You know, watching Conor McGregor between this and the awful things that he said at 118. It's just he seems to me like a guy who's just simply out of control and thinks that absolutely no rules apply to him, and he can just throw around the, well, I'm Conor McGregor, and, you know, you need me to get him out of anything. And at some point, the UFC has to come down on that. They can't have him popping up here, there, and everywhere doing ridiculous things. He's still a champion within their company. He needs to abide by some rules. And I realize that it's hard for the UFC to discipline him, but I think there can be some creative ways to do so. I don't know whether it's certainly not, you know, monetary, but maybe something of the effect where he's got to be out and about promoting cards he's not on, stuff that he clearly doesn't like to do. Maybe that's the only way to get to him. But at this point, he just seems to me like he's a guy that, you know, his fame and his fortune has gotten to his head a little bit. And he looks and acts like he's above everything. And at some point that all comes crashing down, and it was on UFC to discipline him after those terrible remarks. They didn't do it. And I think they have to step up and do something now before it really gets out of control.
And what's so interesting about it, it's like, you don't hear stories about McGregor outside of MMA doing crazy, ridiculous things. But when it's, you know, around his sport, he's doing these things. And it's one thing to jump in the cage and, you know, want to celebrate with your teammate, but respectfully, I guess, in a way, as opposed to jumping in the cage and running around like a maniac tackling people. You know, that made it all the worse.
And the other thing too is, you know, he makes that win for his teammate all about him. And, you know, the story the next morning was, sure, a little bit that his teammate won the fight, but really it was, oh, did you see Conor McGregor storm the cage at this Bellator event? And I think that's misguided for him, too.
I mean, it couldn't work out better for Bellator, because they were tweeting it left and right as soon as it happened. So
yeah,
they got their publicity out of it. So good for them. But, you know, serious note here, Zach, I'll start with you. If you were to, let's say, if you were in charge of handing down some sort of punishment, what would it be?
I would suspend him probably for, gosh, I'd say probably up to 3 months, because you need him almost more than he needs them. So I think suspending him for too much longer than that is just giving him what he wants and giving him time to seek out that next endeavor. So you have to lay in a suspension that is long enough to show that it's meaningful, but not long enough where you can, you know, use your asset again. The other thing that I would do within those 3 months is, like I said, I would do it almost like a UFC community service of sorts. Get out there, promote the company, promote, you know, the other fights, other cards, you know, around the world, which is something we all know that Conor McGregor doesn't like to do. He likes to do things on his own time. I think a minor suspension along with that, you know, quote unquote UFC outreach community service is the mirror those two together somehow and lay that down to them and say, hey, this isn't going to be tolerated anymore. And next time, you know, it's going to be worse.
And Robert, Zach's going with 3 months. Are you going longer?
I don't even know if I go with suspension because I think suspension would be kind of fruitless in this situation. It reminds me of like in baseball when they suspend a pitcher for 2 weeks. So they basically have missed one day and it doesn't actually mean anything. And that's kind of for a fighter. Fighters don't fight every weekend. So suspending a guy for 3 months that hasn't fought in over a year is kind of a difficult thing to do. Now, I know today the commission said he was suspended for UFC 219, but there's no actual evidence to suggest that he was ever actually booked for that card. So who knows what that actually is. I would look at if the guy's going to fight, which I think you got to hit his purse for that for his next fight, sort of make it conditional. And I think that would effectively serve as a suspension because maybe the guy wouldn't want to fight if he's not going to get, you know, the massive payday that would likely be coming to him. I think you hit that angle of it instead of going the suspension route. I think the suspension route can so easily be circumvented.
I think the UFC set a precedent, though, with Roy Nelson in the 6 months. So I think they have to at least suspend him for 6 months. Now, whether if there's any monetary punishment, he can handle whatever it is. But I think at minimum it's got to be 6 months. I would start there. And then if they went further from there, you know, so be it. All right, guys. In the other big news story, Anderson Silva has failed an out-of-competition test and has thus been removed from his scheduled fight against Kelvin Gastelum at UFC Fight Night 122. Since that news broke, Michael Bisping has agreed to step in for Silva and will now fight Gastelum on 3 weeks' notice. Robert, a lot here to unpack. What if anything does this do to Silva's legacy, and is it wise for Bisping to take this fight? And the reason I ask is, I mean, the UFC, I mean, they couldn't find another middleweight willing to take the fight. So instead, they have to go with a fighter who just lost his title 21 days prior. What are your thoughts?
This does not speak well to the effectiveness of keeping fighters safe, of those BS suspensions that are handed out at the end of every fight, you know, when a guy gets a concussion. This doesn't speak well to any of that. Props to Bisping. It's amazing that now he's not the champion. He immediately reverted back to regular Bisping, who was fighting all the time and taking fights on short notice. So he does need to be commended for that. As far as Anderson Silva goes, look, it's a tricky thing. I don't think anything ever is going to stick to him, and I don't know why. Because there's just some guys that will get caught with a PED infraction and it like forever taints their careers. There's other guys that they can kind of sell, you know, they can be have that on them and it's looked at as something different. And I don't think it should be. Look, Anderson Silva is a guy that we make that Mount Rushmore and he's a guy that's always on that list. He's a guy with two PED violations, but yet in the same breath, people say that, you know, Brock Lesnar can't have an easy entrance back into the UFC, and Jon Jones is this big bust that needs to be expunged because of their PED pass. And, you know, Chris Cyborg, and people are refusing to fight her for PED tests from 10 years ago. None of that ever seems to stick with Anderson Silva, but I think we have no evidence that it probably should.
Why do you think it is viewed differently? Which I agree with you. It does seem to be viewed differently. So like Jon Jones, you know, compared to Anderson Silva, why do you think it's viewed differently?
I think because the opinion makers have a soft spot for Anderson Silva because he, you know, a lot of people who probably got into MMA, who cover MMA or discuss it, probably got into it because of him or at the time that he was so dominant. So it's difficult to sort of, you know, destroy your heroes in that process, even if it's from a very, you know, subconscious level. I think that's part of it. I think Anderson Silva brings up feelings, not even just the media, of like a nostalgic time in MMA. And whereas a guy like a Jon Jones or a Brock Lesnar, we view as these jocks that are making all this money to, you know, to be in our sacred sport. Well, Anderson Silva, kind of, you know, is the guy that dominated the sport from within. So I think there's certain aspects there of that.
Yeah. And Zach, what's your take?
Yeah, I think, Robert, I think you're right on the money with everything that you said. I was as far as the Silva thing goes, I was pretty disappointed to see that news, because, you know, in my mind, in covering the sport and watching it, I try to be very consistent with my opinion on that kind of thing. And, you know, I just don't think I can come to a conclusion of just how good Silva is and was based on these failed tests. I think he's got to be held to the same standard as John Jones. And, you know, to me, I think Silva probably is one of the best of all time, but he has these two black marks on his record, unfortunately, that will always, in my mind, make me just wonder a little bit whether that's right or wrong. You know, the proof is in the pudding. He certainly has had a legendary career, but it's just those two little asterisks that always make me go, okay, huh, you know, is that real or is that not? And that's, to me, that's unfortunate. As far as this being the guy to fill his void, I think that's a big mistake. And like I said, I think Robert hit it on the head. Props to Bisping for taking the fight. He's a fighter. That's what he does. I don't think the UFC should have even asked him to do that. They can't possibly be out on the front lines talking about fighter safety and then throwing their fighters out there 3-4 weeks after getting knocked out on pay-per-view. So I think it's a depending on what happens, it could be a PR nightmare for the UFC. But for Bisping, you know, it makes me a little bit interested to watch. So it just... I contradict myself there a little bit, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of Bisping taking this fight either. And I think it's one of those cases where you kind of have to protect the fighter from himself because, yeah, I mean, Bisping has that mentality where, you know, he's a fighter and he's going to fight. So, you know, I think the UFC needs...
But, and wasn't this...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, wasn't this the same card... Is this the same card that Mark Hunt got replaced off of because of that, because
yes.
They were trying to keep him safe based on what he said. So it's like that.
No, that's actually this weekend's card.
Oh, I thought that wasn't Sydney.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's
no, that's where Verdun.
Oh,
came
that's
in
right.
When,
that's
when
right.
Hunt,
it's UFC
right.
Sydney.
Yeah. Okay. I'm getting myself mixed up. Okay. Thank you.
The point stands though.
Right.
The point stands though. Right. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, just having looking at the fight, I mean, I don't know how you could even back Bisping in this fight if you were a betting man. So I expect Gastelum to win. What do you guys think as far as the outcome goes?
Robert. Yeah, I agree.
I actually like
he's
Bisping
gonna win.
Here.
You like Bisping?
Really? Yeah, I think Gastelum looks so out of place at middleweight as far as his size goes that I think it'll actually, you know, bear out that way. But I could be totally wrong. US would be right that, you know, because Bisping's already had the camp and then the come down from the camp. You know, how's that going to affect him?
Yeah, that's true. But we have a few weeks before we have to preview that one. So, all right, let's take our second break. And then when we come back, we do have a caller on hold. And then we will play another round of Fact or Fiction.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, we are back. Let's go to our caller. Hello, I believe you are either calling from out of the country or Skype. If you can hear me, you are...
Yeah, hey, guys, I'm calling you... hey, guys, I'm calling you all the way up from Russia.
Oh, well, welcome.
Wow. Welcome.
Yeah, it's almost 8 a.m. over there, so I'm calling you just before work. I want to ask you about Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, how big it will be for the promotion. What do you think about it?
Well, before I answer that, I have to apologize now for keeping you on hold as long as I did, considering you have to get to work.
Nah, it's okay.
But to answer your question, I really like it. I'm not quite sure why they have some light heavyweights in the heavyweight tournament. That is a little baffling to me. But in general, I like the idea, and I'm actually – I mean, I enjoy Bellator. I enjoy their product. I watch all of their events. So I'm a Bellator fan anyway. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Robert, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so long as it doesn't go into the traps that MMA tournaments tend to do where people get hurt and so you don't get the matchups that you were promised – this is awesome. It's like when you look at it, I think they had to add the light heavyweights for star power. This is like the most star-studded thing, though, that Bellator could possibly do. And if everybody stays healthy, I think you could get some really exciting, you know, even quasi, I wouldn't say dream matches, but maybe like mid-afternoon nap matches out of this thing. That'll be very exciting. I hope it all works out.
Yeah, and Zach, anything to add?
No, not too much to add. I think it's great. I think it's going to be exciting. And yeah, provided everybody can stay healthy, the name power in this thing is pretty big. So I think it's going to be really exciting to watch, provided everybody stays healthy and can make fights.
Yeah, good point with the health of the fighters, too. Anything else for us?
Do you think Bobby Lashley will be a kind of replacement fighter? Because it seems like he was hoping for the big fight in the near future, and he's not in the tournament.
I'm sorry, which fighter?
Bobby Lashley.
Oh, Bobby Lashley. Yeah, you know, I'm sure, and Zach, you might actually be able to answer this better than I could. I would assume it's because of his wrestling commitments.
Yeah, I think that is what it is, at least at this time. You know, he could be sitting there now going, oh, man, I wish I could be a part of this thing. But as far as I know, he is committed to the pro wrestling side of things for at least the recent future.
Yeah, if it's, you know, if I had my choice, I would definitely rather see him in the Bellator tournament than, you know, in TNA or whatever, Impact, whatever they're calling themselves now. Robert, anything?
Who knows?
No, I'll just say, I mean, it makes sense to not have him in the tournament just because there'd be multiple dates you have to commit to. I wouldn't be shocked, though, that if he were to get the winner of this tournament in the near future, because after this tournament ended, a lot of those heavyweight matchups would have already happened in the tournament.
Right.
So you could definitely see him getting that big fight, you know, very soon.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Anything else for us before you have to leave for work?
Do you agree that it seems like now Ryan Bader is the best fighter in this tournament, like if you look at them right now?
Yeah, I think from an athletic standpoint, it would either be him or maybe even King Mo as far as athleticness or their athleticism. I think Matt Mitrione, you know, has a decent shot. I would probably say Fedor Mir, probably. I think they're fighting each other the first round, actually, so one of them will get knocked out early. But I don't see either one of them winning it. Zach, if you had to handicap it, who would be your top three as favorites to win?
Yeah, I think to me, I like your Mo pick for sure. You know, he, from an athletic standpoint, he is, you know, the cream of the crop out of that group. And I think also from just, you know, being able to, you know, receive punishment and turn around quickly and get back into camp and get back out there. I think, you know, when I look at him and I go, okay, that's a guy who could be successful doing something like that. I like Bader too. And then, for my third one, I'll agree with you on Mitrione too. But really, I like the Mo pick.
And Robert?
I have the literal exact same three. I maybe give the edge to Mitrione just because if the idea of being fighting at heavyweight, he fits the matrix as far as being just young enough and still athletic enough and still powerful enough while also having that experience at heavyweight. So that's why he might be my slight pick on my power rankings, but it's definitely very difficult to handicap.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Anything else for us?
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Sorry for the accents.
No, that's okay. Thanks for calling. Call again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, guys. All the way from Russia. That was cool. All right.
That's very cool.
It's time for another round.
We made it.
I know, right? Time for another round of Fact or Fiction. We are going to start with a couple of MMA statements, and then we'll transition to a few from the WWE. Let's start with Diego Sanchez has the best mean mug in the UFC. Robert, is that fact or fiction?
I'll say fact just because he works so hard to achieve it. I mean, other guys look meaner and scarier, but nobody ever looks like they're trying as hard as Diego Sanchez. So I'll say fact.
He does work hard at that. And Zach, fact or fiction?
Wow. It's a tough to argue, but I'm going to say fiction just because I'll always have a soft spot for Ronda Rousey's mean mug. So she gets my pick.
All right. I am going to side with Robert in this one and say that it is fact. All right. The next one. Quentin Rampage Jackson will win at least one fight in the Bellator heavyweight tournament. Zach, is that fact or fiction?
Oh man, I am going to say fiction on this. I just don't. The looking at all the competition in there, I know the brackets haven't all been put out yet, but I just think the game is passing by a little bit, and I just don't see him coming through.
And Robert.
Yeah, I'm going to say fiction as well. When you kind of power rank it, I kind of have him and Chael at the bottom of this thing. So unless they match up against each other, I'm going to say it's unlikely that he wins a fight.
I agree with both of you. I think it's fiction as well. All right, next. Cody Garbrandt will be a UFC champion again. Robert, start with you on this one. Is that fact or fiction?
Yeah, I'm going to say fact just based on age. I mean, the guy's only like 26. And it's, you know, I think he's a guy that the UFC be willing to overlook the fact that he maybe not be the most deserving at times. So I definitely think he'll get the opportunity, and he's a good enough fighter that I think he'll take advantage of that opportunity.
And Zach, what do you think? Is that fact or fiction?
That is fact. I think he will be a champion again in the UFC. I think, you know, when he won the title in dominating fashion, and then he kind of lost it in reverse fashion. And I just think there's a middle ground for him there. He's young, you know, the UFC needs guys like that to feature, if nothing else. So just for that reason alone, I think he's going to get an opportunity, and I think he's young enough to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with both of you. I think it's fact as well. Next one, Joanna Jędrzejczyk will be a UFC champion again. Zach, I'll start with you. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fact. I can't rule out that her loss was anything more than a fluke at this point, even though I thought the fight was really entertaining. And I think there's something to be said for Namajunas, but I also think you have to look at her and say, okay, can she repeat that against one of the best female fighters ever? And just because I can't answer that wholeheartedly, I just think she's ripe for the picking, and I think even in their next rematch together, a title might change hands again. So absolutely fact on this.
And Robert?
I'll say fiction just based on the fact that I don't know how long she really has left at MMA. But, you know, a while back she was making waves that she didn't really want to fight too much into her 30s. So she might – if something happens with the rematch and doesn't go through, I would agree with Zach. I'd pick her in the rematch because I still think she's the better fighter. But I just think the opportunities may be limited. So I'm gonna say that she doesn't actually become a champion again.
I'm going to side with Robert on this one. I think it's fiction as well, and a lot of for the same reasons. All right, so let's transition to some WWE statements. Chris Jericho will be back with the WWE prior to WrestleMania. Robert, is that fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction because my guess is that New Japan might get one more match out of him. With that said, for all this, there's going to be heat between the two sides. WWE's Twitter account has been nothing but like Jericho-centric for the last day and a half, so I don't think the heat is as hot as we were maybe led to believe.
And Zach, fact or fiction?
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say fact on this for the reason that Robert just kind of mentioned. WWE in no way is distancing themselves from Chris Jericho like they would and like they have done with other talents who have gone outside of the WWE to do stuff. So I think the Heat is a simmer at best. And for me, looking at when Wrestle Kingdom is and when the Royal Rumble is, I could easily see Jericho being a surprise entrant in that Royal Rumble. So I'm going to go with fact, just because I think there's more than meets the eye here in what Vince knows and what he doesn't know about this venture by Jericho.
Yeah, I am going to say that statement is fact as well. Jinder Mahal will win back the title from AJ Styles prior to the India tour. Zach, I'll start with you. Is that fact or fiction?
That is fiction. Everything that came out this weekend, I think, with the social media videos of AJ Styles and Nakamura teasing a feud together in the ring, and then also Triple H calling out Jinder Mahal and Jinder Mahal accepting the challenge for a match in India, I think all but guarantees that AJ is going to hang on to that belt at least through the end of the year, in my opinion. I think at this point in time, ratings have suffered enough. I don't think there's the buzz around SmackDown Live that there was a year ago, and you can pinpoint that to Jinder Mahal getting that strap. So I think he's going to be featured prominently, obviously, in a match against Triple H, but I don't see him winning that belt back before the India tour.
And Robert, what do you think? Is that statement a fact or fiction?
Yeah, I don't think he wins it back, just because I think Triple H was added because Triple H is essentially the title in that situation. I think that's why they would add a star like that instead of having him just against another match. They had to put some kind of attraction on his match. And to be quite frank, I love AJ Styles, but it's actually a bigger match, him facing Triple H anyway. So I think maybe they got the best of both worlds here.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's fiction as well. And finally, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens will still be with the WWE in 2018. Robert, fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fact, kind of begrudgingly, because with all the waves that have been made lately and as successful as everyone outside of the WWE suddenly is, there definitely seems to be some momentum headed that way. But I think everything will get patched up towards the end of the year, and everything will be in harmony going into 2018.
And Zach, what do you think? Is that fact or fiction?
Yeah, I think that's fact. I think they will be with the WWE into 2018 and beyond. You know, Shane McMahon just, did the job for Kevin Owens in a high-profile match to set up Sami Zayn and Owens. And I think, that wasn't that long ago. And WWE and officials backstage had to know the type of guys Owens and Zayn were, and I don't think they should be, surprised if there was any sort of, I don't think that Owens and Zayn aren't company guys, but I do think they want to be trusted to do things their way. So, not fully knowing, because nobody will ever fully know, what happened over there, I think regardless, too much has been invested in them to just toss them aside, and I don't think Vince will do it.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said, so I will say that. It's fact as well. All right, guys, let's take our last break, and then when we come back, we will preview WWE Survivor Series coming up this weekend.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right. So, let's move into WWE Survivor Series coming up this weekend, and considering we still have the both go-home shows coming up this week for Raw and SmackDown, we'll just base our predictions on what we currently know. So let's start with WWE Universal Champion Brock Lesnar versus WWE Champion AJ Styles. Zach, I'll start with you on this one. Who do you see coming out victorious?
I definitely see Brock Lesnar coming out victorious. I think You know, unfortunately for AJ Styles, I think he's just a guy in this scenario that's going to be, you know, fed to the beast. And pun definitely intended there. I think AJ's coming off a heck of a week. But when you're going up against Brock Lesnar, you know, Brock Lesnar is being protected, and he's being protected for one man and one man only, and that's Roman Reigns. I don't think that narrative has changed. Because of that, I think AJ and Brock are going to have a good match. I see it playing out kind of like the CM Punk Brock Lesnar match a few years ago at SummerSlam played out, where, you know, Punk does just enough to think that he might win. And, you know, in the end, Brock cleanly becomes victorious. So I think AJ is going to get into more offense than people think. I think it's going to be a good match, but I don't think the story changes here. And I think Brock goes over and goes over convincingly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. I think it's going to be a really good match as well. And kind of going back to our last conversation about Mahal, you know, I almost wish Lesnar was facing Mahal, because I think Lesnar would win that for sure. And now that he's going to go over AJ Styles, while I'm a fan of Lesnar, I really don't want to see Styles lose here. So I'm a little torn on this one. Well, I think it's going to be a really good match, and I think it's great for Styles to be in the match with Lesnar. I'm still, you know, torn, because, you know, I just don't want to see Styles lose. Robert, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I got Brock going over here too. I don't think it'll be that damaging to AJ, because he is so established already within the company as being this top-rate performer. There's no shame in losing to Brock. I think if it would have been Jinder, they were still trying to establish Jinder. So it would have actually been a huge momentum killer to have him be this guy that's sort of on the rise and then hit the Brock Lesnar wall. I don't think, as long as AJ has a decent showing in the match, I don't think it'll be that detrimental to him.
All right, so clean sweep, we're all going with Brock Lesnar in this one. In the men's Survivor Series elimination match, Team Raw, Kurt Angle, Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, and Jason Jordan. First Team SmackDown, Shane McMahon, Randy Orton, Shinsuke Nakamura, Bobby Roode, and John Cena. Robert, I'll start with you. Which team goes over here?
This is hard, because it's hard to pick against anything, but John Cena is on the team, so it's kind of hard to pick against SmackDown. But I'll go with Team Raw, because I actually think whatever's going on, if it's resolved with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, they're going to somehow factor into this finish and cost SmackDown the match. So I'll take Team Raw.
Yeah, this can go a lot of different directions. And prior to Cena being added, it seemed pretty clear, almost detrimentally, that Team Raw was going to win here. But now that they did add Cena, to your point, yeah, it definitely makes it a little bit more intriguing. Zach, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Cena's involvement definitely makes the whole thing more intriguing. That said, I agree with what Robert said. I think Raw is going to – honestly, I think the match overall is just going to have so many moving parts in it that it's going to be either really entertaining to watch or something that's so outrageous that you can't even follow it. I don't see too much of a middle ground here. On the Raw side, I think, you know, Jason Jordan's involvement, you know, leads me to believe there could be an opportunity for a heel turn somewhere. And then on the flip side for SmackDown, I agree that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens certainly are going to get involved somehow and to kind of make the SmackDown team lose because they're not on it. And I think you have those two scenarios on each team, and I just don't know which one's going to play out. That said, sticking with what I said before about Owens and Zayn, the company's got a lot, you know, invested in them. A lot of the SmackDown show is based around them. So I see them costing SmackDown the match and Raw going over.
I'm going with Team SmackDown here. I think the original plan was somehow Jason Jordan cost Team Raw the match. And I think they're going to see that through. You guys both bring up good points with Owens and Zayn, but I think they're going to stick to the original plan here, so I'm going with Team SmackDown. On the women's side, we have Team Raw, which includes Alicia Fox, Nia Jax, Asuka, Sasha Banks, and, I guess to be determined, first Team SmackDown, with Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Carmella, Naomi, and Tamina. And Zach, we'll start with you on this one. Who do you see winning this?
I'm going with the Raw team here as well, only because Asuka is on that team, and I don't think she's going to be anywhere near a loss for a very, very long time, be it a tag team match, Survivor Series-style match, singles match. I think WWE sees her as a really hot commodity and as a dominant female performer for years to come, and I don't think they're going to kind of cash that equity out in a Survivor Series match, even if she's not the one to take the pinfall. I think she needs to be surrounded by wins right now, and there's plenty of stars and performers on the SmackDown side that can take a pinfall and not be hurt here. Asuka needs to look dominant, and I think they'll use this match to showcase some of that with the likes of Charlotte being on the other team, Becky Lynch being on the other team. I think we'll have some good stare downs there, but to me, looking at the match, it would be optimal to use it as a way to get Asuka just even more over than she already is. So I'm going Team Raw here for that reason.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder as far as Asuka goes. Now, let's not fool ourselves here. WWE's booking, you know, can leave you scratching your head sometimes. So I can't see them having, sure, you know, Team Raw lose and then just saying, well, it wasn't Asuka that, you know, took the pinfall. It wasn't Asuka's fault that they lost, so on and so forth. But yeah, I'm going to side with you on this one, though. I'm going to go with Team Raw. But I would not be surprised in the least to see them have Team SmackDown go over here. Robert, what are your thoughts?
I almost echo everything you guys say. I think this is where Asuka really gets showcased. Hopefully she has sort of some of those rapid eliminations, and then there's probably a big stare down with her and Charlotte leading to something down the line. I will say this, though. It's hard to pick a team that has Charlotte on it versus a team that has Sasha in a pay-per-view environment. It's really hard to pick against Charlotte, but I will do that against my better judgment and pick Team Raw.
Yeah, I agree with your point to a certain extent. Had this been a year ago, I probably would have agreed with it more, but now I just don't see it. But I don't know. That I think this one has a lot of potential to be really good. And especially if they do go that route, you know, with a face-off or stare-off with Charlotte Flair and Asuka, I think that'd be really, really exciting. So, all right, guys, let's move on to the Raw Women's Champion, Alexa Bliss, taking on SmackDown Women's Champion Natalya. I believe this is non-title, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I thought so. Robert, start with you. Who do you see going over?
Yeah, I think Alexa is the one they have a little more invested in. It's a weird matchup with just these two heels with both these championship matches, but I'll take Alexa here.
I'm going to go with Alexa Bliss as well. And Zach, clean sweep?
Yeah, clean sweep. I'm going with Alexa as well. Provided I believe tomorrow night on SmackDown there is a women's championship match between Charlotte and Natalya. So I think we all should have the opportunity to change our pick if it's Charlotte versus Alexa Bliss come Sunday. But for right now, Alexa Bliss all the way against Natty.
Yeah, that would change my pick as well. All right, Raw Tag Team Champions Sheamus and Cesaro versus SmackDown Tag Team Champions The Usos. Zach, start with you here.
I'm going with The Usos here. I've just been so impressed with their work since they turned heel, and their feud with the New Day was incredible. Matches of the night on virtually all of the pay-per-view events that they wrestled on. I think that the Raw Tag Team Championships were hot-shotted a little bit over to Sheamus and Cesaro just because WWE wanted to do something else with the Shield. So for that reason, I think, you know, they're better used at this point as fodder to just put the SmackDown Tag Team Champions over more. I think Usos needed a little bit more, but I'm expecting this match to be really, really good. Because I think, you know, the talent in that ring between these four guys is off the charts. So I would look at this one as can't miss for Sunday night.
Yeah, the high-profile tag team matches on these network specials have just been excellent lately. I was a little disappointed.
Yeah,
and I was a little disappointed to see them take the belts off of off the Shield. So I'm definitely going with the Usos on this one. Robert, clean sweep here.
No, I'm going to go with Sheamus and Cesaro just because I think they need to kind of reestablish them because they sort of spent the last month kind of, you know, being the Shield's whipping boys before taking the title from them. So I think we get Sheamus and Cesaro with the big win here.
All right, moving on. Intercontinental Champion The Miz versus United States Champion Baron Corbin. Robert, we'll start with you here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with The Miz. I think he's such an important part of Raw that they want to keep him strong with, you know, with all his antics. Baron Corbin is so inconsequential to everything going on SmackDown. I'm going to go with The Miz here.
And Zach. Zach, you there? And Robert, you still here?
Yeah, I'm still around.
Yeah, looks like Zach dropped off. All right, when we get him back on, let's see. Zach,
you guys hear me?
Zach, you back?
That's me. Yes, I'm here.
All right. Looks like you dropped off there. All right. So we are on The Miz against Baron Corbin.
Oh, yes. I'm going with the Miz on this one. I believe that he's, whether believe it or not, he is a focal point of Monday Night Raw. He's used by the WWE to get a lot of babyface talent over, but he needs some equity here and there to continuously be able to do that. I don't think Baron Corbin is really on a path right now on SmackDown Live. I don't think the loss hurts him too much. And I think for that reason, The Miz is going to be the winner on Sunday.
I'm going Baron Corbin here only because if there's anybody that can get his heat back, it's The Miz. I agree with a lot of what you guys both said, but I think Baron Corbin needs a big win. I think he gets it here. All right, guys, let's wrap this up with the Cruiserweight Champion Enzo Amore taking on Kalisto. Zach, I'll start with you here.
I'm going with Enzo here. You know, it's crazy to say, but he's made 205 Live somewhat watchable. There's some personality to that show now. There's some character to that show now, whether you like Enzo or not. I think you can't deny the fact that he brings that to 205 Live, and he brings that when he, you know, walks to the ring every week. So for that reason, the belt needs to be on him. He needs to be the featured guy. And until the WWE finds really tried and true babyface cruiserweight that is not the likes of Kalisto, who has been defined as this loser for his whole career, I think Enzo needs to be that guy, and he needs the belt to do so. So I'm picking Enzo on Sunday.
And Robert.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Zach here. There's no reason to take the belt off of Enzo here. And like you said, the show is just more important with him on it. Hopefully this is like the shortest match of the night because everything you just ran down sounds so awesome until you said the Enzo and Kalisto and such a buzzkill compared to everything else on this card.
Yeah, I think this is the easiest match to call here. So, yeah, clean sweep for Enzo. All right, guys, that'll do it. That'll do it for this episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Robert, if you want to go ahead and give our listeners info on how they can follow you on Twitter and anything else that you want to add.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos.
And Zach, same for you.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Z Hadorn, at ZHEYDORN, and check out the weekly column over at MMA Torch and 205 Live coverage on PW Torch.
All right, excellent. And you can follow me on Twitter at FightChampBlog, and you can read all my columns, as always, at MMATorch.com. So for Zach and Robert, my name is Mike Grocki, and we will be back next week for another episode of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.